Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. This is our Wednesday evening Under the Radar podcast. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by the puppet David Griggs. Below him, David Dorman. And directly below me on the screen from bracketeer.org, we've got Rocco Miller. And we've got a lot to get to, I guess. What is this? Under the Radar? Griggs, what the heck does it mean to be under the radar? Let's start there.
The one sentence definition is that it's the 22 leagues that generally only get one bid. There's no rule that says they're only allowed to get one bid. In fact, there's about five or six teams that we think can get bids this year, but that's generally what it is. What it is not is that it's not the Power Five. That is the Big Ten, Big 12, Big Ten, Big 12, ACC, SEC. Thank you. Yeah. Somebody else finish that off.
Big 10, Big 12, ACC, SEC, Pac-12, Big East, American, Atlantic 10, West Coast, and Mountain West. Those 10 conferences we cover on our Hoops HD reports on Monday nights. In addition, if you're in the top 25 in either national polls, we'll also be covering you on Monday nights. None of these teams that we're going to in any of these other 22 conferences is currently in the top 25.
Yeah, and guys,
well, one of them is on the verge of it. We'll get to that when we get to the Missouri Valley. But
yeah, but guys, like what a night we had last night. We had you know Baylor and USC going down. We had a bunch of incredible games. We're not talking about any of that tonight, though.
Absolutely not. There was a great Minnesota Michigan State game. Not talking about it. There was a great overtime game between Radford and Longwood tonight. That's a game we can discuss. Yeah. Let's get the screen share up here if I can figure out where the buttons are here. I'm having a little trouble tonight. There we go. We always like to start with a feature conference. And given what's coming up this weekend, I figured the perfect place to start this evening would be in the Ohio Valley Conference. Also one of those few conferences with multiple teams that are looking like they are at-large worthy. Rocco, let me start off with you here in the OVC. Not necessarily talk about the team that's technically in first place after their win tonight in Morehead State, but the next two teams down that list there, Murray State and Belmont. How good are these teams?
Well, I think Belmont is a little bit more proven than Murray, just given the fact that Belmont has had the opportunity, I should say, to go to Orlando and play in the Orlando event. They took out a really good Drake team. They played Iona on the heels of Iona's massive upset over Alabama, beat them by 7, and they lose on a final basket to a Dayton team that was basically playing a home game with the amount of sheer people that were from Dayton down there. But they've also won at St. Louis. They've beaten a ridiculously good Chattanooga team. They've also beaten Furman in OT after Furman had won a huge game at Louisville. So Belmont has a lot of evidence, you could say. Murray State's a team, you know, there's a lot to like. They didn't do as good in their MTE. They lost their opener to ETSU, probably their only disappointing game of the year. The win at Memphis, they caught Memphis when Memphis was really playing their worst. It's really not Murray's problem at all, because Memphis can have a decent season and stay around the bubble or maybe a little extra inside. It's only going to help Murray. You know, this Murray State team has Tevin Brown still. He's probably a player of the year candidate in the Ohio Valley. A lot of good options in the Valley, I should say. Justice Hill, KJ Williams. So Murray State is a tenacious offensive rebounding team. What I would call a poor man's Houston, if you will. Just the way they get after the glass. And it's going to be a contrast of styles when they play Belmont this weekend in Nashville. Because Belmont's going to try to speed things up, shoot a lot of threes, get a lot of easy buckets. And Murray's going to try to slow down the pace and create second chances with their tenacious rebounding. So we'll be very curious to see how round one goes. And then when they play later this year, what kind of adjustments do each team make? But this is really great for the Ohio Valley. Unfortunately, both these teams on their way to the Missouri Valley. So it's the last year for the league to really appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. And they do both have a test coming up Thursday night, Griggs. Before we get there, home games for each of them gets pretty bad teams in Austin Peay and Tennessee State, but a little dangerous. Do you think they could be overlooking these games tomorrow?
Could they be a trap? the thing about this league is that it seems like it's got you've got two top 50 caliber teams, and you've got a bunch of you've got eight others that are just nowhere near to where even if they had bad nights, unless they just had a really bad night, they are so much better than everybody else that I just don't think that they're going to really even be tested.
Okay, well, let me ask Dorman. Let me ask you this though. Look at the ratings, especially look at the net ratings. Everybody in this conference is sub 250, or at least sub 235, 238. Other than Murray, Belmont, and Morehead State, who's now 3-0 off of a win they had this evening over Tennessee Martin. And Morehead did win the conference tournament here last year. Could that be the team that might be have a shot at catching one of these guys sleeping one of these nights?
If anyone outside of the top two are going to beat, yeah, it's going to be Morehead State. I don't see the rest of the conference having enough offensive power and defensive to slow down the Belmont and the Murray State. So, yes, if they are going to get knocked off one of Belmont or Murray State, it will be from Morehead State. I'm with the guys. The rest of the conference is pretty weak after the top three.
Yeah, and you see the rest of the upcoming schedule here on the screen. The only game to circle is this Saturday Murray State Belmont game. And we may not be talking much about another big game involving this conference until we get to the end of February, as Paco mentioned, for that second matchup between these two.
Yeah. And I guess a question for all you, but Rocco in particular, Brackett Miller there. can Murray and Belmont push themselves forward in the two and perhaps three games that they play against each other? Or are they pretty much just locked in and all they can really do is hold on? Like, will the winner of the game between the two of them get any credit from the committee?
I think they will. I think the best thing that could happen in a strange way is if each of the road teams won.
Yeah,
in both games, that's the best thing that could possibly happen. It sounds a little crazy, but we see it happen in the Big Ten all the time. They help each other out by running on each other's home court and other big leagues. So that's the dream scenario on paper. But I think it does certainly help to play those games. You want to get as many pieces of data in the top two quadrants as you can provide. Unfortunately, that's probably going to be the only pieces left to provide unless Morehead can really start really performing well against the rest of the league and become a strong number three.
Yeah. Here's some retro under the radar. I think this was back in the days when it was just me and Chad. Remember the home court or the road win exchange program that Wichita yes. State and Creighton had going when they were under the radar teams.
That's right. That's a good way. From the Missouri Valley.
Yeah.
Valley got five bids one year, and I think a lot of that went on.
Yeah.
It does. It's better for your profile to if you're going to split the two games each other, it's better for both your profiles if you win the road games instead of the home games. Absolutely.
Yeah. Totally.
We got 21 other conferences to go to. Let's jump back to the America East here, where Rocco, we just saw tonight the preseason favorite Stony Brook went up to Vermont, the team that I think should have been the preseason favorite, and got their asses kicked.
I mean, it was a clinic, man. Like 98-65, 19 three-pointers on only 30 attempts. I think eight different catamounts made threes. It was just an offensive showcase. Stony Brook has not looked anything like a preseason favorite since the start of the year, in my opinion, and also was very surprised they were picked. Curious to see when they're going to get hot, if they will. But this Vermont team seems to be clicking. That's now four in a row for the Catamounts and a 2-0 start in the league. We'll see if they can go to UMBC on Saturday. You know, Vermont's clearly the better team between the two, but UMBC is a place that has given them trouble over the years.
Yeah. When you look at this resume and you look at the upcoming games and you see that there aren't too many top 200 teams left. This Vermont team, even if they went out, is not going to be inside the bubble or even close to it. But if they were to win the auto bid on the court, forget the metrics, is this team good enough to make somebody sweat in the round of 64? I'm thinking that they are.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think not within the bubble, probably not even a 13 seed, but a 14 seed is probably with, you know, if they really do roll through this, that's probably what you're looking at here. Which is a seed that pulls upsets now and then.
Yeah, and if you look at the net, I mean, we mentioned this with the Ohio Valley. Vermont really should not lose more than one game, and the one game they lose will be a big upset. I mean, they are so much better.
That loss just better not be in the conference tournament. That's all, I can say about that. Vermont,
and if they keep rolling, and if they keep rolling over this conference, they'll get that tournament at on their own home court, which will also help them. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Their games at UMBC and at NJIT are their next two scheduled games. Again, we have a lot more confidence in these games going ahead this week than we did last week, but there are some of these games that will not happen. We are still getting a handful of cancellations as teams are going into some more COVID pauses still. Over in the A-Sun, Dorman, Liberty with a nice win over North Florida the other night, is this Liberty team finally, is Richie McKay's your team here kind of like finally catching their stride and ready to make that run that we kind of expected them to make?
I think so. This is where Coach McKay's teams usually take over. The system is implemented. And from what I've seen the last couple of weeks, Liberty is really playing good basketball. Florida Gulf Coast has shown signs they might be able to compete. But if you're asking me for one team, it's Liberty, and I think a team could win a game in the tournament. This is a talented and experienced Liberty Flames.
Yeah, the Gulf Coast really fell apart on Saturday in their game against Jacksonville. It ended up, I mean, Jacksonville hit, I think, three or four three-pointers in the last minute of the game. It was an incredible game to watch the end of. Rocco, I don't know that Jacksonville is a real contender in this conference. Well, the other Jacksonville State, has some pretty good metrics, at least at this point.
Yeah, well, Jacksonville themselves, they're 2-0 so far in the A-Sun, 10-4 overall under Jordan Mincy in his first year, making a lot of strides. And that Gulf Coast game, I mean, they hit about a 40-footer to win it. And on the same day, Stetson won at North Florida in the same city on a buzzer beater. Pretty cool day in the A-Sun overall. But I'd say Jacksonville State under Ray Harper with his pedigree and the roster they have, they're probably going to be Liberty's toughest challenge. They got a nice win over Lipscomb last night by 5. I think, the way that they win, it's not always pretty, but Jacksonville State is built to last.
Yeah. Interesting games. If we get them this Saturday, it's Liberty at Gulf Coast, two teams we're just discussing, and that big battle of the city of Jacksonville there between Jacksonville and North Florida scheduled for Saturday. That's a nice rivalry. We've also got, I think Jack State is at Eastern Kentucky, a little old OVC game there. Griggs, over in the Big Sky Conference, not necessarily where we want to go here, because we're starting to jam up here with these various top teams, and we didn't get many games in this week either.
Kind of a remark. I mean, the Big Sky is going a little retro Big South here with the top 8 teams being separated by just one game. Now, granted, we're only 4 games in, but quite a bit of parity. Weber State, I still kind of like them. I know that they went through a stretch where they lost 4 or 5 in a row, but 4 of those were really good opponents, and they're off to a 3-1 start. I still like them in Southern Utah. As far as the rest of the league, Northern Colorado looking a little good too, but I don't think they're going to hold on the way that they have.
Well, Northern Colorado's loss was a home loss to Sacramento State, which is not good. Sacramento State's third win in the season. Rocco, I know there's been some COVID issues out of this conference too. That's kind of slowed some teams down, I think, so far.
Yeah, and another one got added to the list today. Southern Utah just had to cancel both their games coming up this week, which were going to be big ones with the Montana schools coming to St. George. But the way I look at the league as a whole.
I think that was a road trip, actually, to the Montana teams.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah, but it's off. Yeah.
Yeah, it's off. So the way I look at the league as a whole is I think there's a tremendous drop-off after the top 6. I call it the 6-pack of the Big Sky, because you look at Weber, Southern Utah, Northern Colorado, both Montanas and Eastern, they've got considerable better talent, better depth, great coaching. And I think, you'll have an occasional upset like the Sac State game where Sac State just shot lights out to beat Northern Colorado, but I do think that these top six are going to beat up on each other, and it's going to be a fun race. We had a real good game Sunday night to end our week last week with both the Montanas playing each other, and Montana State looks like very strong, especially on their home court. And, you know, when we get to the Big Sky tournament time, it could be any of those six. I really could see any of them winning it.
Yeah, it's actually good. Should be a fun tournament actually this year.
It's
a little different. The Big Sky generally has been like a 2-1-2, maybe a 3-team race. I kind of like having this more wide open.
Yeah, I mean, we're used to seeing Weber and Montana just kind of sprint ahead of everybody, and
what every year in Eastern Washington or Southern Utah, somebody else would jump in there. But to have this much parity is kind of fun. This conference, Dorman, down in the Big South Conference.
I love that there's a North Big South. I love that.
Big South North. North Carolina A&T, the new member, now after 3-0 in conference. Gardner-Webb leading in the South Division.
There's a Big South.
The Saints are very upside down from what we expected heading into the season. What are your thoughts on where we're at now?
I'm with you. I did not see Gardner-Webb having a good year. Asheville's out to 2-0 conference start, and I didn't have them doing that well. So unless something goes crazy here and this is upside down, I see a lot of parity. I don't even know. North Carolina A&T is playing some solid ball. They beat Radford the other day. Barely, they squeaked it out. But they got the win. This conference is well up for grabs. I thought Campbell was going to be one of the stronger teams. They have yet to impress me. A lot of the metrics look the same in this conference. I really can't give you a great analysis because I think I need to see some more games from this one.
I kind of agree with you here. I just haven't seen anybody that looks like, hey, we're going to run away with this conference. Winthrop, you know, got the win over Campbell the other night. That's been their only conference game so far. They're the perennial power. Griggs, maybe that's where I got to lean towards to win this conference, just because they always do.
That's who I'm leaning toward. They have kind of been – they've let me down a little bit this year. I mean, granted, that was out of conference play. I think once they get in the conference, they're going to start winning more. That's where I'm leaning, and I really – especially when you look at the numbers, don't have very much to circle to base that on, but that's still the team I like to win the league.
And maybe Rocco, assuming the games go tomorrow night, Asheville at Winthrop, that could tell us a lot about this league.
Yeah, Asheville at Winthrop, you know, Winthrop will be in a position there to defend their home court, but I think they're two of the contenders, no question. Winthrop's got some star power with DJ Burns and Patrick Good, you know, a good nucleus there. Of course, I've talked about it before. They won at Washington this year. So they got a Power 5 win, and that's big for the Big South. I think Dorman's mostly right that there's a lot to be determined. There's a little things to like about a bunch of the teams, but so much inconsistency, it's hard to depend on any of them.
It really is. I think we may be a few more weeks before we really start to see where things are going here. But Rocco, let me stick with you over in the Big West Conference, another conference that is having a little trouble getting some games in. But we've got a four-way tie for first place, right?
That we do. And one of them was a big one. It was Irvine going into Riverside in the Riverine Cup.
Riverine Cup.
That's right. An unfortunate situation for Riverside, just from the standpoint of, a couple days before the game, the county stopped allowing spectators temporarily. So it was an empty gym, and Irvine went in there and pounded them. And for Irvine, that was a sigh of relief, because where they dropped off was way back on December 19th. They were supposed to play a two-game road trip against Duquesne and Buffalo. The Buffalo game ends up getting scratched. Irvine goes down with COVID, and we hadn't heard from them since. They also played terribly in that Duquesne game. The only time we've seen Irvine look bad this year. And I think what I saw on Saturday night was like, okay, Irvine is the Irvine we thought they were. Clearly the favorite to win the league after that statement on the road. And, another team that Riverside getting beat so bad, I don't think they're going to drop off because they're really well coached and they have good players. But I'm keeping my eye on Cal State Fullerton. It's a team that I saw play in the opening game for San Jose State over here. And the reason why is EJ Anasicki, transfer from Tennessee. He's probably next in line to win Big West Player of the Year behind Colin Velp from UC Irvine. And Anasicki, he's like a built like a Charles Barkley. He's tenacious. He's got a heck of an attitude that gets all of the other four guys on the floor fired up. Both the Maddox brothers are tremendously capable of scoring at all levels, both interior and exterior from the three-point line. And I just think Fullerton, nobody's really blown them out yet. They're in every game. They fight, and I think that's a team that you might see in the Big West championship game.
Yeah, they'll be hosting Northridge allegedly tomorrow night. Then they've got a game at UC Santa Barbara. They're hosting Santa Barbara over the weekend. Santa Barbara team's been pretty disappointing. Irvine, with the road trip all the way out to the island to Hawaii coming up tomorrow night, a little late night, midnight Eastern college hoops for those of us that want to stay up late and watch that game. And my understanding that game is a go also to Hawaii had been on a pause, but I think they were back earlier this week even.
Yeah, they played Long Beach last week, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Griggs, over in the Colonial, first of all, you know, James Madison, who was a team that we had said, hey, if they can win every game, they can get there. They did lose at home to Hofstra, though. So I think that with James Madison being ineligible for the Colonial Tournament there, NCAA chances are almost gone completely off the board at this point.
Hofstra might be the most schizophrenic team ever. If you pull them up, it's amazing. You know, they have some decent wins. They played really well. I mean, my God. I don't know if this is going to fit on the screen because the bottom of it is so far from the top. You know, the win at Monmouth is a sensational win. Like we were talking about Monmouth maybe being inside the bubble. They're not that good. Beat Arkansas, who I know has fallen off a little bit. Won at James Madison. Lost at William & Mary. And lost at Stony Brook. Lost at Towson. I mean, they're good is good enough to where you would think that if they just held serve, this would be – We'd be voting them in the top 10, maybe even close to the top five or six, but you never know what they're going to do on any given night.
Well, I'll tell you what, the team that I do like what they did this past week, Dorman, was the Towson Tigers, picking up a pair of wins over Northeastern and Hofstra, a pair of teams that we liked heading into the season this year.
Yeah, that was a big win against Hofstra the other day. I think that shows that Townsend's here to stay. They're going to be in. They're going to be in this race in the Colonial. I also thought Hofstra was going to have a good year. Speedy Claxton looked like he had the guys going on the right page a month ago, and then, like David said, everything has been bad since. But I think Townsend will be heard from before this is over, and. I'm with the guys. I was real high on James Madison. I thought they got a bad deal with the conference, not getting in the tournament. They had a chance to maybe run the table, but not happening. But, look for Townsend to be the team to beat in the Colonial.
Yeah, there's the upcoming schedule here. It's Rocco. And I think a lot of these games are very interesting to just pay attention to. If nothing else, then this is another conference that seems to be pretty wide open. I'm just shocked when I see Northeastern 0-4, for example, in these standings.
Unbelievable. I mean, Northeastern never starts like this in league play. I don't think they've been 0-4 in over 15 years in the CAA. I looked that up yesterday. But, yeah, the league as a whole is awesome. I mean, it's so cool to see that all these teams are highly competitive. You look at the KenPom rankings, almost every team is in the 100 to 2 to like 170 range.
Except for the two teams that are tied for first place. Yeah.
Right. Well, and that was my next point is that UNC Wilmington's turned it all around. They've won five in a row. They look great tonight. They were down in a huge hole against Elon, came all the way back. They've got a different chip on their shoulder in these last few games. I also think these games coming up, as you mentioned, we'll have William & Mary hosting James Madison, which is always a great rivalry. And we'll see if they can improve on that 2-0 unbelievable start. We also have a situation where Delaware is going to go to Hofstra. I think Hofstra's for real. I mean, Aaron Estrada transferred from Oregon there, and he's killing it. And they also have Jalen Ray still and Crooks. I mean, Hofstra's got a very talented team under Speedy. So I mean, they're going to lose a few here and there because this league's just so darn competitive. Don't forget, Delaware's got Jameer Nelson Jr., you know. So I just love what I'm seeing from this league. I'm looking forward to it every day that they have games, including, you know, yesterday, today, and this coming Saturday.
I think the goal for these teams this season may be just finish in the top six so you at least don't have to play an extra game in the conference tournament. That may be all you need, right? Because I think any team that gets at least gets a bypass that first round has a shot to win this conference tournament when we get there.
It's a big edge, yeah.
Greg, so it was an interesting week in Conference USA for UAB, yes, who is a team we've been singing the praises of. They go on the road Thursday night at North Texas, another very good team that we really like, get the huge win, come home against what I classified as a side dish in rice, and yes. and they lose. I think that was actually at Rice. I'm sorry, that was not a home game, but
it was. But I mean, still a game that you would expect UAB to win without really even having to sweat. Nothing against Rice; they're having a pretty good year. Their program is getting a little better, and that was certainly a nice win for them. But as well as UAB played at North Texas and as well as they had been playing, you just expected them to go on the road and hold serve, and they didn't. And this is like this UAB team, I kind of had it in the back of my mind. Was this team going to be on the bubble, on the board, had they blown through the conference? And they could still do it. But when you're losing to condiments or to side dishes, as you put it, it's hard to argue for them. And it is kind of disappointing. Like, you know, all the loss at Rice was close. The loss at South Carolina, very close. A game they arguably should have won. Right in there was San Francisco. So when you look at this profile and you look at the wins and losses and you look at the metrics, I think that they're a team that's even better on the court, or they've played enough, or they're capable of doing much better than what they've done, even though what they've done is still pretty good.
The other team, Dorman, that I'm still keeping an eye on here is this Louisiana Tech team. Now won five in a row. There's nothing really good at the top of the profile, so I don't know that they're at large bid good, but they have looked very good so far in this conference. Obviously, we'll know a little bit more when they play UAB a couple times and North Texas a couple times later on.
I like this La Tech team a lot, Chad. The losses, like you see to the right there, LSU, Alabama, and then a slip up to NC State. Nothing to worry about there. But they didn't get any of those wins, so the at-large chances are slim at this moment. But like you said, they got two chances against UAB, one to end the season, and then the conference tournament. I like La Tech. I like the way they're trending. I don't see a lot of teams in this conference that can play with them. So I would look for La Tech to be coming on hot right now and then bring it into March.
Right. And you see the upcoming schedule in this conference. UAB is going to be hosting the two Florida schools, for example. Louisiana Tech, I think they got Southern Miss there if that game's a go. Southern Miss twice, actually, back-to-back, if according to what the schedule says here, at least. A little home and home series.
Yeah, correct. Yep.
They should be able. You got to sweep those series. Southern Miss is not a very good team.
No, they are not.
Rocco, over in the Horizon League here, Oakland sitting at 5-0. They finally got back on the court, but one of those games was Ohio Christian. But then they beat up on Milwaukee.
They did, and you know Baldwin's back on the shelf. So Milwaukee minus Baldwin is almost like a 300 plus type of team. So. You know, Oakland is a superior team for this level with Jamal Cain and Jalen Moore and Trey Townsend, just elite level players. And Jamal Cain's probably, for any under the radar league, the player of the year right now. If we had to do a vote, I would vote for him. Tremendous transfer from Marquette. I think the big story in this league is ahead of us. It's the big game coming tomorrow. At the Wolstein Center, a place I got to visit earlier this year, where Cleveland State's going to host this Oakland team. Yep. You got contrasting styles. Oakland loves to spread things out, do a lot of dynamic offense. Cleveland State's got one of the most annoying defenses you can find in the country. It's going to be a joy to watch. I'll have to record the game because I'm sure, you know, like the rest of us have to juggle 30 other games at the same time. But it's definitely one that I'm going to want to go back and rewatch because this is shaping up as the game of the year in the Horizon early on.
I think Griggs, the other story, the Horizon, maybe IUPUI, but for a different reason.
Yeah, they're in the hunt for the centenary. No D1 wins. Right, trending right there at 357. I just don't know if there's enough bad losses.
Big chance coming up Tuesday night when they have a game that was just added at Ohio State. Congrats to Ohio State for really, really going out and scheduling yourself some tough non-conference competition.
Yeah.
That is not under the radar, though. But
if they win that game, they might. If they win that game, we might just give them the centenary because,
we'll give Ohio State the centenary. Forget that. The centenary award we give every year here at Hoops HD to the worst team in Division I. Dorman, the Ivy League, Princeton off to a 2-0 start, although we still have not seen Yale play a conference game in over 2 years. So. Who knows?
I keep watching Penn. I like this Penn team. I know they struggled out of conference. Steve Donahue knows this conference really well, inside and out. He did some great work at Cornell. Princeton, yes, is off to a nice start, but I think Penn can really match them and really is going to be, in my opinion, a two-man race between Princeton and Penn. Although there are some other talented teams in the league, we need to maybe see a little from Yale. People in the preseason like them. But to me, it's going to come down to Princeton and Penn.
Well, you know, they'll play each other Monday night. But Rocco, I think Yale's back on the court this weekend, or are they still shut down?
Yeah, it's on schedule so far. So
okay,
yeah,
that's good because it'd be nice to see them. But Rocco, I think this Yale team will end up being the best team in the conference at the end of the day. But
really? Yeah. Chad, real quick, if we could go back to the scores here. I just want to give a quick shout out to Dartmouth for winning the first Brown Mouth Cup in 2 years. That's between Brown and the Brown Mouth Cup.
All right, Rocco, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I think that was an interesting result because the night before, Brown played an emotional, inspired game over Harvard and got the win. In the Ivy, of course, you got the back-to-back. And they got to go to Dartmouth right after that, and Dartmouth slaps them in the mouth in the Brown Mouth Cup. But back to Yale, like I think, you know, if anything else, you know, all other factors aside, I think Yale's got the coach I trust the most in Mr. Jones, and I think they have the best player in Azar Swain. It's just really fascinating because these Ivy League results during non-conference, there were so many. Like really impressive, surprising ones. And then of course some disappointing ones, and now already in league, same boat. It's really, I guess it's just going to come down to who gets hot late in the year, kind of like baseball. Usually the hottest team wins the World Series. That's kind of how I think the Ivy's going to go. I can envision like five or six of them at this point getting hot and having enough there to do it.
Yeah, and of course, only the top four teams even make the conference tournament, which will be Harvard will be hosting it. So if Harvard can make that four, something to keep an eye on as well. But let's try to keep things rolling along here. Metro Atlantic Conference, Dorman with Iona escaped a win in Fairfield the Tuesday afternoon. It was a strange, like a 2 o'clock Eastern start, but they were in trouble most of that game, but somehow found a way to pull it out. And you can't lose a game like that if you want an at-large bid.
They can't lose games like that. I feel like that we could say that about a lot of their conference games. They keep escaping some of these games in the conference, but I give King Rice a lot of credit. This Monmouth team I did not see coming to be this strong, and he's really doing a really nice job there. I'm starting to think the MAAC can land two bids. If Iona and Monmouth stay strong, they can lose to each other, but that's about it. Now, that's a tough thing in the MAAC because there's so many rivalries, so many tough games when you go on the road. It's tough to sweep through this conference, but Iona and Monmouth are so much stronger than the rest. There shouldn't be many losses between the two of them.
And they go at it on Tuesday. That is a big game.
I was going to say before that, though, this is a real tough week for Iona. Assuming these games get in Friday night, their big rivalry with Manhattan.
Yeah.
You've got to host Niagara on Sunday before you go to Monmouth on Tuesday. So Iona goes 3-0 this week. I had them a little bit below the bubble last week, and you guys all yelled at me.
Yes, I did, as we should have.
I'll change my tunes on them. Monmouth, it'd be nice to see them get back on the court as well. They haven't played in a couple, in a week or two, 10 days or so.
Tricky game for them coming up on Friday.
At St. Peter's, a little in-state rivalry there, not that far between the two schools. And St. Peter's, a tough little school there. Rocco, the other MAC, the Mid-American Conference, Ohio got the win at Kent over Kent State, got the win over Bowling Green. They're doing what they need to do so far.
So far, so good for the Bobcats. I think, you know, what is this now? 8 in a row, 9 in a row? I don't think any of them were games they could really afford to lose. Maybe the one at Akron, that was their best of the bunch. And now they've got Central Michigan and Miami, Ohio on the road. Again, on paper, they got to be wins. But in reality, they're not going to be easy. I think Central Michigan should be pretty easy, but Miami, Ohio will be a dogfight.
If then, Central Michigan isn't easy, I take back everything I've said that's good about this team.
Yeah, you just never know on the road in the conference.
You had Northern Illinois going to Kent State the other night and winning. That was a huge surprise of this league. So. Yeah. You never know in this conference. And
Central Michigan went into Kent State and beat them too. Very bizarre COVID issues there, but still, you think that wouldn't be possible. I like Ohio a lot. They deserve the credit they're getting. It's just by and large, they're going to get beat sooner or later. It's just the MAC's too tough.
Yeah. Right. They've got their first game against Toledo coming up following week, and that's a. That's game to really – you really want to circle this. Toledo team is, I think, has played the second best of anybody in this conference so far.
Toledo's ranked the highest right now in the KenPom. So that's something to pay attention to.
And I was liking this Toledo team, and then the team you were just – everyone was knocking on, Kent State, knocks off Toledo. So this conference is up for grabs, but I agree with you. Toledo's a solid ball club. Yep.
Dorman. How about the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference, where we're starting to get a little bit of conference play underway here finally. Only 8 teams, so they started a bit later than everybody else. Norfolk State, though, did get the win over Delaware State to start off 1-0, and is it time to move on to the next conference?
Yes, it is. Norfolk will run away with it.
I agree.
It's hard for me to say anybody else, although keep an eye on Howard.
I like Howard. They're fun to watch.
They got the second. Was it the second best 3-point shooter in the nation? And his name just slipped my mind.
Elijah Hawkins.
Thank you. Yep.
Yeah, and I think they have the fastest tempo, or one of the fastest tempos.
and circle Howard this week. Not only Saturday hosting the Norfolk State team we just talked about. Then Monday coming up on Martin Luther King Day, hosting Notre Dame in that makeup of last year's non-conference game.
Red hot Notre Dame, by the way, too. So if they beat them now, it's even more impressive.
Yeah.
But I think Norfolk's got a great record, and they squeaked out a ton of those wins by less than 5 points. And kudos to them. That shows they're good at closing games. But I don't want to count out like Coppin or Morgan either. I think both those programs did a good job of finding solid players at the MEAC level. And I just think there's going to be some wars between those four.
If you look at some of the metrics, at least say that Eastern Shore could be in there as well, but I don't
there's
really
so
know
much improved. It's crazy.
So I actually think this entire conference is improved despite some of these records, but we're not used to seeing teams that are 500 overall or above 500 at this point of the season, at this conference. Right. So you never know.
Pretty impressive. Yeah.
Missouri Valley Conference coming up on the screen here. Just a couple of scores that did not quite make the screen. Drake did beat Illinois State, and Missouri State beat Southern Illinois tonight as well, to what you're seeing on there. Obviously, the story in this conference is Loyola Chicago, who may not be under the radar by next week if they crack the top 25. We talked about it Monday night.
Every week. Loyola had a couple of escapes. I don't remember if Bradley went in the overtime, but they needed double overtime to get by a Valpo team that, quite frankly, isn't that good. But they did
that, Griggs, coming off of that huge win over San Francisco. Rocker, you were at that game. Yep.
Yeah, and that is fair. And I think sometimes when you're really good and you're consistently undermatched, it's just hard to kind of get up for games. They were way behind in both those games. And it really was impressive how they came back. But I think that that's what's going on. I just think it's like, okay, when is March going to get here?
Welcome to the Valley is what I would say to that. Because there are no nights off in the Valley. If we need to call our boy Barry Hinson to confirm that, let's get him on the phone.
Let's get him on the phone.
Nights off in the Valley.
No nights off in this league. Right, but actually, Rocco, one team I wanted to ask you about is a team we really liked heading into the season that was awful non-conference. It beat up again, but Northern Iowa now 4-1 in the league with a huge win at Missouri State.
That's awesome.
As opposed to last year where they waited till the conference tournament before they started playing well. Maybe they're starting to play well a little earlier this year.
I think so. I mean, I feel bad for their non-conference because they couldn't get a clean bill of health for most of it. But, you know, Bowen Bourne was out those early losses to Nichols in Vermont, which looked terrible. Out in Hawaii, they lost two really close ones to Liberty and Wyoming without Tyler Burhau, a really important starter. So now they've had everybody for the Valley games and the one they lost was way back on December 1st on that opening day, a 2-point loss to Bradley, I might add. So they're 4-0 with their full team here in the league. I think they're definitely a contender, somebody that Loyola can't sleep on. They might be a little better than Drake. We'll find out. They just beat Missouri State in Springfield, as you mentioned. That game was incredible. I think it's the story of for the league for the week because Isaiah Mosley goes for 43. AJ Green goes for 33. The highest combined two players scoring on opposite teams anywhere in college basketball this season. Go back and rewatch it if you didn't see it. It was awesome to see in 86-85 game. So, Northern Iowa, I think definitely staying power, and they're starting to come back to the team we thought they were in the preseason.
Yeah, the team we thought they were for the last year and a half.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah. Totally.
Real interesting. We had Dorman, Loyola Chicago, a pair of road games. I know they're at Indiana State, at Evansville, but it's so dangerous when you're on the road in the Valley.
Yeah, they could, like David brought up, Loyola really was down big at home in the second half this week in their last two games. Going on the road is going to be tough. They're going to have to play good ball to win both those games, even though both those teams are at the bottom of the standings in the Valley. But to me, the story of this conference continues to be the fact that this is a one-bid league. And with the talent and the coaching and what I thought these teams had ready to go in the preseason and the schedules they had put together and their opportunities, and they just fell flat on their face in the preseason. Now all you can do is beat up each other in the conference, and that's just not going to get it done. The only chance the Valley gets two teams in the tournament is if someone knocks off Loyola in the conference tournament.
Right. But I could see it happening. The Arch Madness.
I could too.
Yeah.
Yep. This is a Loyola team that lost by two to Michigan State and really had a chance to win that game. When they are playing up to their ceiling, they are so damn good.
Okay, well, Greg, so let me stick with you for a second, jump over to the Northeast Conference.
Are you
yet a believer after a huge comeback to beat Bryant last week? Are you yet a believer in the Wagner Seahawks and their 59 net?
Not in the 59 yet, but I'm a believer in the first place team. I'm also a believer.
Come on, 10 seed inside the bubble. Where are you?
Oh, that would be amazing. It won't happen. But how would that? Well,
they did win at VCU. That is a quad
and they won decisively, and that's one of the things that's making the net jump out of its shoes. The other thing is, some of their road wins have looked really good. I don't know. No, I am not a believer that they're going to be inside the bubble.
No two-bit NEC.
Oh, it would be amazing, though. I think they should take the entire NEC and make it a region in and of itself. We'll call it the Northeast region. That's how much I like this league.
Dorman, the other story here is Merrimack again, not eligible for the postseason, but off to a 4-0 start, another strong start. This is a team that is showing that they are right from the get-go here. They're a contender in this conference, and they could be a perennial power once they get postseason eligible in a few years.
I think they will be. I think Merrimack will be a big-time contender in the Northeast for a long time. Unfortunately, we're not going to get to see it this year in the conference tournament because they're not eligible. And I would have liked to seen them go up with Wagner in a conference tournament. But I agree with you. And they're not the only one. There's a bunch of teams that aren't eligible because of a transition year that are just really impressing me. And Merrimack is on that list. Playing great basketball, and it's tough to convert to Division One basketball, but teams like Merrimack are really doing a great job.
There's the upcoming schedule in the conference, and the game of note absolutely is highlighted right there.
The Battle of Brooklyn.
Assuming we can get it in, there's no cancellations. Round one of the Battle of Brooklyn between Long Island and SFBK should be exciting. I think that the Northeast is kind of not allowing any fans in, or I don't know, most of these schools are not allowing fans in right now, which is going to be a little disappointing if this ends up being in a empty gymnasium. But it's still St. John's,
especially on a holiday.
Yeah. That, I mean, other schools in New York have fans in there. The Knicks have fans in there, and this is much bigger than anything the Knicks. This is the Battle of Brooklyn.
Rocco, how about the Patriot League, where we're still getting games in here? We're after the conference. This conference surprisingly has been doing pretty well in getting their games played.
I think right now Navy's the story. Is as things move along, they're 4-0 to start, and I think the big one's tomorrow. So a little backstory: last year, I think both Navy and Colgate went almost unscathed in league, but never played each other. And then in the conference tournament, if you remember, Navy got knocked off in the quarters in a big upset against Loyola Maryland. And so they never played each other in the conference tournament either. So it's been 2 years since Colgate and Navy have faced each other. Most of the players are back from last year on each side. I think there's going to be a lot of fireworks tomorrow night in Annapolis. I'm really looking forward to it. Colgate experienced a 5-game losing streak until they won on Tuesday to get off the schneid. But Colgate did beat Syracuse earlier this year. They've got bombers all over the court. It's a very big contrasting styles between these two. And I just think that's going to be a great Patriot League ball game tomorrow.
Yeah, there it is. You see, there's actually a lot of games scheduled with Thursday, Sunday, Wednesday. Next Wednesday will be recording our next show, but we've got a lot of good action here. So we'll see. If Navy wins this one and they pick up these other two wins at BU and home against Lehigh, that they could start to run away with this conference.
Don't lose sight on Army. Army's got a good squad there. Jimmy Allen's doing a really good job. Army might be heard from before this is all over.
I agree with you. I'm excited for this. Could be some of the best Army Navy games we've seen in a while. Yes. On the basketball side, when we get to them later in the season. Dorman, let me stick with you over into the SoCon, which we were been singing the praises of the Chattanooga Mocs all season until they go down to a little place called Western Carolina tonight. They were up early in the game. Around halftime, they fell down, and they could never put the run together. It got worse and worse and worse, and it ended up being an 11-point loss at WCU.
I haven't seen the game yet. I taped it. I'm surprised. When I was putting my list together, Chattanooga was on that list. We'll see later of the top 10. But Chattanooga is playing great basketball. They were rolling. Took the Citadel over last weekend and just rolled them. They've been boat racing teams. And then all of a sudden they fell apart tonight. So I'm not sure what exactly happened tonight. But I still think Chattanooga is the best team in this conference. And minus an upset in March, Chattanooga could be dangerous first round opponent.
Well, Rocco, I think the big question with the Mocs is this was if you're going to have a loss, you write off, this is it here. Is there an at-large possibility here? Should they really just roll through this conference and bounce back from what happened tonight?
I don't think an at-large possibility is going to come together for Chattanooga just because now they've got a home loss to Charleston, who's high 100s. They got a road loss to Western Carolina, who's high 200s. And I think you're looking at a resume where really you just have the VCU win on the road. And unless Loyola Marymount makes a huge run in the WCC, which I'm sure Mox fans are all on board with. But beyond that, the road win at Wofford is in the league, and that's their next best win. So I think Chattanooga, as Norman said, is probably still the team to beat. I love their defensive makeup. I think Malachi Smith's probably the best player in the league. And of course, they have Silvio D'Souza. As long as he doesn't start any more brawls, they should be okay.
As long as he doesn't throw any chairs, he's fine.
Throw the chairs, yeah, right. Got to be careful over there. But yeah, I think this team's awesome. It's just, you know, you're going to have nights like this in the league. It's a bust league. You're not always going to have your best nights. And Western Carolina, look at their home games. Even though their metrics are terrible, they play hard in their home games. So I knew tonight was probably going to be a difficult one. And Chattanooga plays such low scoring games. If they don't score enough, they'll just get nipped like this.
Yeah, it's a shame. If you know, I think I do agree with you. That at large bit is
the margins much, are so slim.
Yes. Are pretty. I mean, you literally win every game until the conference tournament championship game. They get a look, but that's pretty much where they're at this point. Unfortunately,
yeah, I think so too.
They get Furman at home coming up on Saturday, and I think that's only the only game I see in the schedule here for the next week. But that is a big game. It's a battle for first place now.
And Chattanooga will be pissed. They'll be pissed. So it's a good spot for them after a loss.
Mr. Griggs.
Yes.
Last week, our feature conference with the Southland Conference heading into the amazing Southland in-season tournament. And we talked about the semifinal between Corpus Christi and Nicholls State being the game we were circling. It came to be that the game was played. Nicholls got the win. Got a championship game against a Southeastern Louisiana team that had struggled to beat Houston Baptist. They had struggled to beat McNeese to get to the championship game. So, of course, Southeastern won that game and won the title.
Well, it just goes to show you that you never know what's going to happen at the in-season Southland Conference tournament. I mean, you throw the records out the window. It was just an amazing event.
Top of that, Southeastern Louisiana struggled to only beat Tougaloo by 5 points tonight. A non-D1 Tougaloo team.
I watched far more of this than what I, even by under the radar standards, I think I was, I don't know if maybe our good friend, the commissioner, was watching more of it than we were, Tom Burnett, mm-hmm. but I pretty much, it's amazing how much of this that I actually watched. I have not seen Southern basketball ever.
Can I ask you guys a question? If you know, why would the commissioner of the Southland decide not to count those as conference games? There's only obviously seven other teams besides yourself. Why not put that as part of the conference games?
Well, because you're going to have the regular double round robin to determine the seeding in the conference tournament.
Yeah.
So they will sell 14 more games. The whole point here, I think, was with only 14 regular season conference games, get yourself three more basically non-conference games. More games, okay. Especially in early January when every other league almost is playing conference games.
That's right.
There's nobody else to put on your schedule this time, at this point of the season.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Thank you.
Here's the upcut. We actually finally get into on Saturday some real conference play here. I don't know that there's any of these four games I'm actually circling.
Yeah, see, now that these are conference games, I'm not as interested as I was in the in-season conference tournament.
Rocco, how about the SWAC, which congratulations to Prairie View and Mississippi Valley State and Florida A&M. Everybody now has a D1 win.
Everybody's on the board. And I mean, I think the story is Mississippi Valley's unbelievable win at Prairie View.
It was overtime. Unbelievable.
Yep.
I mean, it's a team that barely ever wins, if ever. And to win it at Prairie View was not the game I was expecting them to get. Let's just put it that way. Because I do think Prairie View is a contender for the league title.
They were shorthanded for the game, correct, though?
Right, okay. Yeah. No Juwan Daniels, and he's clearly the alpha for Prairie View. And he came back in their win, and you saw – how much better they played with him, but still, I mean, Mississippi Valley's just had some really much more competitive games this year versus years past. They almost beat Arkansas State out of the Sun Belt, for example, back in December. So shout out to the Delta Devils. We don't get to give them shout outs too often. Much due respect after that win. And I do like the Southern Jags. I've been impressed with them, not only in their three SWAC wins, but also, because they got the Texas Southern win in hand by 13 points. Texas Southern, a perennial powerhouse in the SWAC, and a team that beat Florida this year. Southern won at Kent State this year, along with those bottom feeding MAC teams. They also won at Tulane this year. I think the Jags actually have some depth. They have some juice there, and they might start carrying the flag forward for maybe the majority of the year. Their next 7 or 8 games are pretty manageable until they play Prairie View in February. So you don't want to look ahead too much in a much improved SWAC, but I like a lot what I'm seeing from the Southern Jags.
Yeah, they're at Grambling for the next game. Grambling team that's, you know,
rival. No.
Yeah. Oh, that's
his Bayou one. Classic, baby.
Yep.
Griggs, how about the Summit League? Let's just get those standings up on the screen here if we can, first of all. Maybe not. There they are. South Dakota State now 4-0. Not playing here. Oh, they beat South Dakota over the weekend. They did.
Well, that's one word for it. Beat, destroyed, murdered, killed, you know, whatever. What they did to South Dakota was illegal in most states, but apparently not in South Dakota. I think South Dakota State is the best team in the conference. But one of the things I would like to point out, Chad, is in addition to the North Dakota State team that you've been kind of big on, Oral Roberts has woken up. I think given how strong they finished the season last year and with everything they had coming back, we were kind of disappointed at some of their showings out of conference. But now that they're sort of in the league play, they're 5-1, and we've seen what they can do when they're on and they're clicking and they're playing up to their ceiling. I know Rocco's probably chomping at the bit to jump in here. I'll get to him in a second. But in addition to South Dakota State, watch out for ORU.
Yeah. Huge one at Western Illinois, who's fallen off the face of the planet, though. Rocco, yes. Did you want to get in there on that?
Yeah, no, the Western Illinois game was unbelievable because I thought Western Illinois had dropped off the planet, and they came out roaring against ORU. I think they built a 20-point lead in the first half, and then ORU just came blasting back throughout the end of the first half and into the second. 87-86 came down to the last shot. And Oral Roberts didn't have Carlos Juergens in that game either, who's a really key player. So Max Asemus, once again, doing it all, baby. 32 points, 11 assists against WIU. Not a ton of D in the Summit, as we always talk about, but yeah. It is so fun to watch these guys just fill it up and just kind of go at each other. And when we get another Oral South Dakota State game, I mean, it's going to be lights out.
Yeah.
You see on the schedule, South Dakota State's going to be at Omaha and hosting Denver this week. Oral Roberts, they're at Kansas City. I can cross those St. Thomas games off. They just went into a shutdown tonight.
I still love what St. Thomas has done. I can't believe what St. Thomas has done.
Dorman, how about the Sun Belt Conference, which is the conference of I have no idea who's going to win it. Let's just pick a number between 1 and 12 out of a hat.
I sang the praises last week. I'm still on Troy. I like what they're doing.
I like them too.
They beat Coastal over the, I believe it was last weekend, Thursday or Friday, 980. Really well coached. They're going to play defense. They're going to get in your face, and they're going to guard for 40 minutes. That I know. Offensively, they struggle at times. They don't have great shooters, but like I said, I love their defensive tenacity, and they're going to, this will be another fun conference tournament because it is wide open.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out who I like in this conference. I think you're right. This week it is Troy, maybe Louisiana up there, but next week it may be somebody else. It's just the way, I think for the last 2 years now that this conference has gone, Rocco, you know, Troy's hosting Georgia Southern and Georgia State this week. Two teams, those games are out?
Yeah, Troy went on pause today, unfortunately.
All right. Well, so and unfortunately, now you got to come back from pause when you're playing so well, and who knows what happens.
Of course,
maybe we'll get those Louisiana games in at least. The big piece of news out of this conference, a little bit of news: Texas Arlington news today. They are going to be making a move out of the Sun Belt over to the WAC, effective next season. Little Rock already on their way out to the OVC, I believe. If I'm correct,
I believe that's correct. Yep.
Speaking of the WAC, where Arlington is going to, We are sitting here with a two-way tie for first place between New Mexico State and Grand Canyon. Seattle also undefeated, although they haven't been playing. And really, you know, all that New Mexico State and Grand Canyon are doing is being up on Texas Rio Grande Valley. Right. So I don't really know if that really counts as much. But Rocco, is there anything else that you've really seen out of this conference at this point? Maybe just the disappointing week for Abilene Christian.
I think there's a lot. I think Abilene Christian had a very disappointing week. We were very high on them coming in into the week. They lose two home games. I thought Sam Houston State had a great week. You know, you can't forget that they have Savion Flagg. He's looking like an all-whack player. He came from Texas A&M, as we know, and that makes a big difference for Sam Houston. I think Tarleton also just an awesome week. You know, we spent a lot of time talking about them in the Gonzaga performance, and now it is carrying over to these games. That's what was the big mystery was. They beat Sam Houston, and they beat Stephen F. Austin in overtime. So Tarleton just continuing to pester teams in all shapes and sizes. And the real story here is Chicago State.
Yes, I'm so glad. Yeah, the first conference win in 48 years.
It's unbelievable. They beat Cal Baptist, who's not like UT Rio Grande Valley. Cal Baptist has got good players, and they, Taron Armstrong's like one of the big stories in mid-major world today. So for Chicago State to beat them, it's just wow. Hats off. And they're 4-3 at home against D1 teams. It's not like it's the first one they beat. It's just the first whack one they beat.
Chicago State showing off a little bit of something for the conferences that might be interested. This is their last year of the whack. They don't have a league set for next season. So Ohio Valley Conference, MEAC, ACC, if you're looking at Chicago ACC, State, Big Ten, Pac-12, whoever wants them, they're available.
Well, the one thing about the Big Ten, Chad, is that they're already sort of into the Chicago market, where the ACC is not. So, exactly. I mean, you know.
Chicago State to the ACC. We got to get this going here. Here's the upcoming schedule for this the conference here. New Mexico State hosting Tarleton on Thursday night. If we get that game in, that's a one to definitely circle. If Notre Dame travel partner. It doesn't end up getting canceled. So, that could be an interesting one. Dorman, should we check in on some mythical conferences here?
Yeah, of course.
How about the Front Range Conference?
There we go.
Yeah. Colorado State, actually, you can add another non-conference winner for them in a cross-Beehive rivalry win over Utah State this evening. But they're still winning the conference.
Winning the conference, they're undefeated still in the conference. They don't think we have any conference games coming up in the next week or two, do we?
Let's see.
No conference games coming up this week. We're looking for those Colorado State, Wyoming, and Wyoming Air Force games that we'll be getting in Mountain West play. And the very disappointing news, Rocco, I don't think you were with us last week, but we may have a situation with the Colorado Buffaloes. Unless they meet in the NIT or NCAA or some type of postseason tournament, they will not play a single Front Range team all season. And that's a crime.
It's their own fault. You know why? Yeah. Because if they wouldn't have lost to Southern Illinois in the Paradise Jam, they could have gone on and played Colorado State in the championship. And so they screwed the whole thing up themselves. They got nobody to blame but themselves.
And they all used to play each other. Colorado, I guess, just got too good to do it.
And, you know, Utah at least played one Beehive game here. Here's the Beehive Conference. Utah Valley with a big win this week, knocking off Dixie State to move half a game behind BYU along with Southern Utah there in the standings in the Beehive Conference.
And a very nice out-of-conference win for BYU, beating St. Mary's.
Quest for the bucket.
Yeah.
The quest for the old Ochre Bucket. Rocco, you were on location in Utah last week.
Couldn't find it.
Any signs of the old Ochre Bucket?
I looked everywhere, Chad. I couldn't find it. I looked under mountains. I dug under snow. It wasn't down there. I don't know where else to look.
Check out the local garbage dump.
No.
I tried the state liquor store, and all I found there was a picture of Griggs.
I guess we got to go to top 10 lists here real yes. quick here. I know we're running behind in time already. Top 10 list for January 12th. These are the honorable wow. mentions.
That's a lot of people getting votes. Gee.
North Texas, Oakland, South Dakota State, James Madison, UC Irvine, Toledo, Towson, even Wagner getting a little bit of love from some of us. But let's go to the actual top 10. Coming in 10th place, Louisiana Tech out of Conference USA. 9th place, we got that Chattanooga team. A couple of us voted before they lost tonight, though, so that may have kept them in the play.
How about Monmouth?
At number 7, we have UAB, the best team in conference, you say, despite the two losses, despite the one loss to Rice this week.
To the side dish, yes.
Two-way tie for 5th place between Ohio U and New Mexico State out of the whack there.
Like this Ohio U team, and I agree with the top 4. I don't know the
number
order,
4 is Murray State, obviously.
Yeah.
Iona coming in at number 3.
Ooh, wow.
Ooh, that's kind of low.
Belmont jumping up over Iona. Iona losing the game to St. Louis non-conference this past week. Dropped them out of the top spots there. And coming in number 1, I guess we need a little drum roll.
Hello, Loyola Chicago.
There it is. Loyola Chicago, number 1 for now. Could be off the list by next week. But let's go ahead and pull this down here. Run to any final thoughts. Rocco, let me start with you.
Yeah, I'll talk about that Wagner team. I am a believer. I love Alex Morales and the roster there with Bashir Mason, a very awesome up-and-coming head coach. I think Wagner, like, their only losses are at Seton Hall and at Penn State. If they somehow ran the NEC table, which is not the worst league to be in if you have to run the table, it'd be really interesting to see what the committee did, especially if they lost to the second best team in the title game. Let's say it's Bryant or somebody of that caliber. I don't know what they would do, because you would have a team with less than a full season. I think they missed 4 or 5 games when they were out. So they'd probably be somewhere around 24-3, but maybe only the one bad loss in the title. I think they would be compelling to throw in the play-in game, but I don't know if we'll get that close or any of that's going to happen. It's just, I really think Wagner's that good. And they could end up in the top 100 in KenPom if they keep blowing teams out in this league.
I'll tell you that they could also be, should they get the auto bid, get in there, you know, be up there to maybe a 13-14 seed. One of the best chances. The Northeast Conference has never gone beyond the round of 64. They've never won a game outside of a play-in game in the NCAA tournament in its history. This may be the year that they could actually, it could actually happen too. So it'll be exciting if Wagner gets in there. Dorman, I know you wanted me to pull something up on the screen here. Do you want to comment first before I play the video, or should we just go right to the video?
Let's go right to the video. Notice the amount of timeouts both teams have, please.
One timeout each year. Let's play for about 20 or 30 seconds.
So collected. Kansas retakes the lead. Shot clock is dark. Brockington, the step back. The master of the mid-range. 1 point Iowa State lead. Kansas has a timeout. Off they go. Final 10 seconds. Harris flips it in. Kansas back in front. Hunter the kick. Kalscher. Final seconds. Brown the tip.
There you go, Dorman. That was under the radar. That was under the radar.
This is not about the teams involved here. No, neither team is under the radar. This is a coaching clinic here. Both teams had timeouts. How many times do we see coaches calling timeout, timeout, timeout in the last minute? Coaches, let the offense go. Don't give the defense time to set up by calling a timeout. You might be able to push the ball and find an open guy. You might be able to push the ball and get a mismatch. There's so many coaches so quick to call timeouts when there's a few seconds left in the game. And then they call a timeout. They have, they let the guy dribble at the top of the key, and then he fades away because none of his offensive teammates are moving, fades away with the guy in his face, and he bricks it. Coaches, work on this in practice. You've got these guys in your gym every day. Work on this in the practice and in pregame. And when the game comes down to it, let the game flow play out. You're more likely to get a good shot. The reason I wanted to show that video there was Iowa State and Kansas, to their credit, got a lot of good looks in that last 30 seconds. No one needed to set up offensive plays. Guys got open. Guys were moving. The defenses weren't set. And guys got a good shot and good looks. Most of them even went in. Coaches, stop calling your timeouts. You don't need to be the story of every game. Let your offense roll.
You know, and I'm with you completely, Dorman. Look at the biggest win of the season, the biggest win in history, when Rutgers beat Purdue earlier this season. You know what did not happen between Purdue taking the lead and the game-winning half-court shot for the Scarlet Knights? There was no timeout. There was no play stoppage. Rutgers, we inbound the ball, one move, get a – it was an open look. It was a half-court look, but it was an open half-court look for Harper, and he made it. So, hey, it was exciting, and that's the way the game should be played. I'm with you completely. Greg, do you want to finish this out?
Yeah, just real quick, because I realize we got to be quick to kind of piggyback on what Dorman is saying. I would like to see fewer team timeouts, because just as a fan, and I think even as a player, you don't want to just continue to stop the game. I'd rather watch players play than coaches coach. Just my personal opinion. The other thing that needs to change, and I say this all the time, but I'll go ahead and say it tonight because it's been at least a couple weeks since I've harped on it. The standard for replay or the parameter needs to be indisputable evidence. And in my opinion, after 30 seconds, if there is still some sort of uncertainty, then by definition, there must be some sort of dispute. Whatever the original call was should stand, and we should get on with the game. I think, you know, pauses that take 2 and 3 and 5 minutes, like the one we're looking at right now, if you're watching St. John's UConn, which is also not under the radar, are more disruptive to the game than a call that could go either way that's so close that you still can't tell.
Yeah, we really need to take 5 minutes to decide whether there's 17.3 or 17.4 seconds left in the game, because that really...
And I love how they bring a third official in when the first two aren't sure.
Let's just call it quits here, I think, guys. I thank everybody for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow night. We're going to be doing a bracket rundown show. We'll be back next week with all kinds of podcasts as well. But for David Dorman, David Griggs, Rocco Miller, check him out, bracketeer.org as well as pretty much every podcast on the internet these days, I think. Doing a great job out there, Rocco. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you again real soon.